Hey YouTube, it's Pastor Dwayne here. So today we are in the new studio area. Yes, it looks a little bit different back here, but it's all good. Things are going to change a little bit as time goes on. We're going to add a couple little things there, make it look all nice and fancy. But in the meantime, we have Brian Ross with us here today, and we are going to be talking about Acts 12:4, the whole Easter thing. So Brian, why don't you go ahead and say hello to everybody.
Hello everybody. Dwayne, it's great to be back on your channel. Appreciate you having me on to discuss this interesting subject.
Acts 12:4, I'm going to pull it up here and read it, just so everybody understands what we're talking about here. And Acts 12:4 in the King James Version, I know you are a King James Version guy, so we'll do this in the King James Version. So this is Herod apprehending Peter. He's causing issues for the church. It says, and when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. The question that we are asking today is this. Is Easter a bad translation of the word Pascha there? So to kind of bring you up to speed, what's happening here is the word Pascha in the New Testament, the Greek New Testament, appears like, I think it's 28 or 29 times in the New Testament, and every time that it appears in the King James Version, it's translated as Passover, except for this one instance where it's translated as Easter. And of course, some people held the idea, and I held the idea once too. In fact, you can go back in my videos way back a number of years ago where I thought Easter was a bad translation and shouldn't be used here. But I have since changed my views, and we've got Brian here to help us explain why it's not really a bad translation. So, Brian, what's up with Easter and Passover and Pascha? And what's going on here?
So there's a big debate that rages amongst, you know, advocates of the King James and modern version advocates over this being a mistranslation here in Acts 12:4 of the Greek word Pascha. And like you said, every other place it's translated Passover except for this one spot. And so folks who are critical of the King James, let's just say it that way, will say, well, that's an error, that's a mistake, that's a mistranslation. Everyone knows that Pascha is Passover. And then, of course, this leads to folks on the King James side to develop arguments in defense of why Easter isn't wrong. Probably the most famous or most well-known, the one that I see the most often, is the one that is put forth by Dr. Sam Gipp in the Answer Book, where he has a very elaborate defense of why Easter is correct in this verse, and it centers around the timing of the passage. And so if you go back to verse 3, it says, and because he, that's Herod, saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further, to take Peter also. And then in parentheses, it says, then were the days of unleavened bread. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth unto the people. So the way the argument works is that Passover is one day and unleavened bread follows Passover. And that's a feast of 7 days, according to the Old Testament. And so Herod is arresting Peter during the days of unleavened bread, and he's intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. And so it's asserted that Easter there is referring to a pagan festival, pagan spring festival, and Herod, being a pagan, is going to keep Peter in jail until after he celebrates his spring festival. That's sort of a summary of the way the argument works.
Now, of course, the one passage, and I mentioned this in that video, I don't know if you had a chance, I think I sent it to you like a while ago to say, hey, just look at this video and critique it. This is my really old one. So I referred back to this passage in Luke chapter 22, verse 1, and it says, now the feast of unleavened bread drew near, which is called Passover, and the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him, for they feared the people. Now this is, of course, Luke, who's the same writer who wrote the book of Acts. And in this passage, he's basically saying that the Feast of Unleavened Bread is also considered Passover. He takes the Feast of Unleavened Bread and pushes that into the definition of Pascha. And so to kind of counteract that sort of popular argument that's coming from people like Sam Gipp, my argument goes, well, if Luke called the Feast of Unleavened Passover, then he's referring to this larger period of time as the Passover in much the same way that we would refer to like Christmas holidays, like the 2 weeks that we get off and the New Year's Day and the New Year's Eve and then the Christmas Day. And we lump that all together and call that, you know, Christmas today in our culture. He's doing the same thing here with the Feast of Unleavened Bread and Passover.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that if Luke does that in Luke 22:1, then the question I would raise is, well, is there evidence of any other biblical writer doing the same thing? And we find that in Ezekiel 45, verse 21, where it says, in the first month and the 14th day of the month, ye shall eat the Passover. And then it literally says, a feast of 7 days, unleavened right. bread shall be eaten. So you have two texts in Ezekiel 45 and Luke 22 that are clearly connecting. I mean, they're so closely related anyway. The Passover is the 14th. Unleavened bread starts on the 15th and goes to the 21st. And so you have Ezekiel and Luke who are connecting both together and calling it all Passover. And what I find interesting about that is these verses are conveniently left out of all the exposition of Acts 12:4 that's trying to make right. the argument that it's a pagan thing. The expositors and proponents of that view are leaving out of all of their discussion Ezekiel 45:21 and Luke 22:1, which, I mean, I don't know. That's just a little too much for me.
So the question then is, with people like Sam Gipp and this argument to try to push Easter as a pagan festival, where does that come from? Where does this whole idea that Easter is a pagan festival, how does that get linked into the term Pascha?
In the 1850s, I believe, Alexander Hislop wrote a book called The Two Babylons, and the subtitle of that is related to, you know, Catholicism, and this became a really popular book in fundamentalism in America during the 20th century. But what Hislop does is he connects Easter with Ishtar Astarte, and he's doing it, though, based solely on phonics, the phonetic sounding of the word, right? Easter, Ishtar sounds the same, so it must be the same thing.
Right.
The problem with that is it's a false etymology, and when you really study it and look into the history, it just doesn't check out. It never was true, in my opinion, and then it sort of became the standard party line in American fundamentalism. What Gipp is doing is he's seizing on that understanding then to advance his argument that he wants to make X12-4.
Now just for the sake of the audience here, Brian did write a book called Let's Not Pass Over Easter, and it's an excellent book. I knew you would have it. I actually have it on the Kindle. I don't usually get paper books very often. But yeah, in it, he goes through these arguments very thoroughly. I think in a video I did in asking Brian here for an opinion on the majority text, he gave a thorough answer. And he does that in this book with the book of Acts 12:4. He gives a very thorough treatment to the discussion. If Astarte Astarte and Ishtar, if those aren't really the terms to use to find the etymology of Easter, where does the term Easter actually come from?
Well, it's a good question. Obviously, it's a pertinent question, but it's related to, so in German, the word is Oster, and in Anglo-Saxon, I'm trying to find it in my notes because I don't have it memorized. But there's an Anglo-Saxon word that is the equivalent, and it basically, both in German and in Anglo-Saxon, it basically just means east. And it can be used to refer to dawn, sunrise, those kinds of concepts. And in Anglo-Saxon, it was used to refer to the Jewish feast of Passover. In German, Oster, like, so when Luther does his translation into German in 1521, every time Pascha, the Greek word Pascha, is in the text, Luther renders it as a form of Oster or Easter in German, because there was no word yet for Passover, and the word really wasn't coined until 1530 when William Tyndale was working on the Pentateuch, and he's translating the story of the 10th plague and how the angel of death literally passed over the doorposts that had the blood sprinkled on them, etc. And so Tyndale invents the word in 1530 when he's working on the Old Testament. But when he did his New Testament in 1526, he used a form of Easter every time Pascha occurred in the text.
Now, that's really funny that you mentioned that. So I go back to that video I made. I think it's like 8 or 9 years ago now. It was quite some time ago. And what happens with that video is every once in a while, somebody will come on there and they'll object to what I said in the video. You can go watch it. I don't hold the same opinion anymore. But somebody had started objecting to the use of Pascha, and were mentioning and talking about how Pascha was actually translated Passover. It was invented by Tyndale. And I remember going back and forth in that discussion, and I was thinking, maybe there really is something to this Passover thing. So almost immediately after I made the videos, the wheels started turning that maybe there was just something not quite right in my thinking there. But I think it's just absolutely fascinating.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to share the screen quick, if I could, and show people the chart. Is that all right?
Yeah. Yeah, let's see it.
All right. So this is a table that I put together when I was doing the research on this topic. And I know maybe it's a little small. It's also in the book if in bigger format if people are interested. But if you look at the West Saxon Gospels from 990, so this only covers the Gospels, Matthew through John, you can see that in the West Saxon Gospels, some form of Easter appears all 26 times that the word is in the text. And in all of these contextual places, it's referring to the Jewish feast. So you can go all the way back to 990 and see the word Easter being used to refer to the Jewish Passover.
So just to make sure, for the sake of our viewers, what you're showing here is a grid where every instance of the term Pascha appears in the New Testament. And
right.
Then along the top are all of the translations and how they have translated the word Pascha into their respective languages.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So it would be every occurrence of Passover, you know, that would occur. You can see Wycliffe just transliterates it as Pasch out of Latin. He doesn't use the word, any form of the word Easter. And here's what I said about Luther. So every time that occurs in the text, he has some form of Ostern, or the Lutheran equivalent of, or sorry, the German equivalent of Easter. And then when you look at Tyndale in 1526, you can see that it's somewhat of a mixed bag. He's sometimes using Paschal, but most of the time he's using Easter. The vast majority of the time, 26 times, in fact, he uses Easter. And then Coverdale here is using Easter. Easter in the Matthew's Bible, Easter in the Great Bible, but now we start to see a sprinkle of Passover as we get to 1530, okay? Now, if I can go down, if you just humor me just for one more minute, I have an Old Testament table as well. And now you can see right here that when Tyndale works on the Old Testament Pentateuch, he starts using the word Passover. Coverdale copies him to some degree, but he still uses the word Easter. And then over time, you can see how usage is shifting away from Easter towards Passover as the preferred way of saying it. And then you can observe the same thing up here in the New Testament as you work your way through time towards the King James Bible.
Okay, so this begs the question then. So why would a translator such as Tyndale, for example, choose in some places to use Paschal, like in Matthew 26:17? I'm just looking real quick. Or Mark 14:12, where he writes Paschal Lamb. But then even in the same verse, he uses Easter Lamb. So why would he use Paschal and then change it to Easter? Was there some sort of thinking, or is this arbitrary?
The short answer is I don't know. Because even in this example here, in the same context, you've got verse 26, Easter, and then by verse 17, he's saying Paschal, and then the next verse, verse 18, he's got Easter. So I don't know why he did that is the short answer. Anything I would say would be speculating. All we can do is report the facts. And I think it's pretty clear that the word before that, at least when you're translating out of Latin, all Wycliffe did is transliterate it.
There's definitely a pattern in the English Bible translation, starting with Tyndale to the King James Version, where Easter is used more in the older ones, and as time goes on, Easter is used less and less and less, to the point where the King James Version uses it only once in the New Testament. So there does seem to be, or the evidence does suggest that there's a declining usage of the term Easter in favor of Passover. And
yeah, for sure. I don't have the data in front of me, but there are some examples of sermons by the translators even after 1611, where they will still refer to the Jewish feast using the older word Easter. So, like, it's pretty clear to me that Easter, and even if you look up the word Easter in the OED, you're going to see that it can refer to the Jewish feast, or it can refer to, you know, like the Christian celebration of the resurrection. And the history of the word in English is, as you can see from the table, has a century-long occurrence of being used to refer to the Jewish feast.
Right, right. And I think this is probably the direction that I'm at now in regards to Acts 12:4, that no, it's not an error in translation. An interesting thing I think was pointed out by Tim Berg, though, is that the book of Acts was translated by a separate committee than the rest of the New Testament. So when it comes to somebody translating the term Pascha, being a different committee than the rest of the New Testament could maybe account for the inconsistency of using Easter versus Passover.
I would comment on that just quick. So if you start over here, I'm looking at this verse right here, John 11:55.
Yep.
So this row, as you work your way across, by the time you get to the Bishop's Bible, Easter is three times in the Bishop's Bible.
Right.
The Bishop's Bible was to serve as the base text for the King James. Okay. So John 11:55, if I read the bishop's reading, John 11:55 says, and the Jews Easter. So they had Easter here twice. So I'm just going to read it the way the bishops would have had it. And the Jews Easter was nigh at hand. And then he went out of the country up to Jerusalem before Easter to purify themselves. So it's explicitly saying it's the Jews Easter. And of course, they revise it twice in that verse to now say Passover. But I do think the explanation for why it's still Easter in Acts 12:4 is because it was done by a different company. It wasn't the same men that worked on the gospel section that worked on Acts. And so for whatever reason, it just made its way to the press with Easter still in the text. But
right.
I see no reason to think that it's not a reference to the Jewish feast.
This brings me to another interesting thing about Easter in Acts 12:4. I think we're both on the same page here, where we think Easter can be used of the Jewish Passover, especially back in that day. And then, of course, it faded out with usage and slowly became to define what the Christian celebration of the resurrection is. I think that's very clear from what we're seeing. But there is another interesting theory out there, and I think this one comes from Nick Sayers. And when he shared it, I think Jack Mormon had revised his way of seeing this passage. And it goes something like this. I hope I'm not misquoting Nick's idea here. But the idea is this, is that in Acts 12:4, we have a reference to the word Pascha, which is the only time in the entirety of the New Testament where the time reference or the temporal reference of Pascha is after the resurrection. So in this passage here, we're referring to events which occurred after the resurrection of Jesus took place. So Nick takes this and he goes back to our passage in Luke chapter 22 and says, see, Luke's writing to a Gentile audience. And so when he talks about the Passover, he has to define what Pascha is. And so what he's doing is he's defining a Christian celebration of the resurrection there and giving that to the Gentile audience and saying, here's what Pascha is. So when we come back over to the King James Version translator's choice of what to use, Passover or Easter, he would then say that Easter was selected because at that point, Luke, writing to his Gentile audiences, is not referencing a Jewish festival, but instead he's writing and referencing the Christian festival of the resurrection. And then he cites a number of early church fathers who use the term Pascha in reference to Easter. I'm almost certain that you've heard of this idea, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on that.
So on page 53 of the book, I address what I call the Christian Passover view, which is essentially, I didn't know this at the time, but it's essentially, you know, Nick's view. It's also the view of the article on the KJV Today website. It takes a similar view to the view that Nick has. I think Nick's done, you know, a lot of great work on this topic of Easter and Acts 12:4, but I don't agree with him on the conclusion. Just go back to what you said. If I read Luke 1, Luke is addressed to Theophilus, Acts 1 is a second part of a two-part treatise that is also addressed to Theophilus.
Right.
And I know that, you know, the books would have readership outside of the individual person, Theophilus, but the reason I see this as significant in Acts 12:4, I think the context of Acts 12:4 is Jewish, okay? Because it's talking about the 12 apostles and what's going on in Jerusalem. So if you go back to verse 1, it says, "Now about that time Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church." To me, I take church there as a reference to the Jewish church in Jerusalem. "And he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to take Peter also." So what's going on in the context? What's going on in the context is Herod is trying to vex the church. He takes James, the brother of John, and kills him. When he sees that it pleases the Jews, he's like, "Well, I'm going to get Peter too." And so he arrests Peter, and then he intends after so let me finish reading it. "And before he saw it please the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread." So Peter was taken during the days of unleavened bread. "And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people." Well, if he's trying to please the Jews, and the Jews, see, Herod's not celebrating anything in this context. It's the Jews who are having a celebration. And when he sees that it pleases them that James, the brother of John, was killed, he's like, "Well, I'm going to get Peter too." And if he's trying to please the Jews, he would not kill Peter during the Jews' feast. He would wait until the Jews' feast was over, and then he would kill Peter. And that's what his intention was. So right. I still view this as all happening in a context where where the text states that Herod's goal is to please the Jews.
So how would Herod be pleasing the Jews by waiting? Was there some sort of like ceremonial thing where you couldn't shed blood on the festival or the Sabbath or something like that? Or was there something else going on? Or maybe they just couldn't travel to watch the event because the Jews perhaps wanted to watch the disciples be put to death?
I think there are probably some ceremonial ritualistic reasons. And like when you think about the Jewish community at that time, I mean, they're very divided between the religious leadership, the high echelon leadership of the nation of Israel, which is very against Peter and what they're doing. In fact, a few chapters earlier, they basically told them that they couldn't speak of the name of Christ. And Peter says, you know, "Should we obey man rather than God," etc. So I think he's trying to please that religious leadership structure of the nation that was essentially apostate, in my opinion. And that's why he holds back until after they had celebrated their feast. It's an interesting thing. They've got no problem killing Jesus. But, you know, Herod's, to me, it's all politics. Herod is playing politics with the leadership of Israel. And so if he's trying to please them, you wouldn't put this guy to death in the middle of their feast.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to be seen as a good ruler, right? That's like every ruler. They want to be seen as a good ruler for the people.
I appreciate a lot, you know, I understand Nick's take on it. I just don't see it in the end. We would agree, I think, on almost everything up till that last point about why is it only this one spot that's Easter? And what Nick would say is that this verse establishes the meaning of the word Easter henceforth as a reference to the resurrection, celebration of the resurrection.
Right. And that's where the definition of Pascha officially changes. A Jewish celebration to a Christian celebration. And then that's where the King James translators officially changed the term Easter to specifically reference the resurrection of Jesus versus the celebration of the Passover.
Yeah, that would be Nick's position. My objection to it is just simply, I don't think the context of Acts 12:4 bears that out. That's just, and Nick disagrees with me about that, and that's fine.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the channel and discuss this with me. I've been promising my audience that I would talk about Acts 12 verse 4, but just all the stuff getting around there and getting it done, it just turned out to be a lot easier to have you come on and share with us. Let me plug his book again. It's a really quick read. It's not very long, and it gives you a really thorough treatment of Acts 12:4. So the book is Let's Not Pass Over Easter, written by Brian Ross here, this guy here that we're talking to now. And I'll leave a link in the description below, and you can go there and check it out.
Thanks for having me on.
Anyway, brothers and sisters, I hope you found this video helpful and insightful. And until next time, we'll see you around.